the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.
Hello, this is Athena Melville, your host for Education Now. In this March 2014 edition, I welcome Kim Losey, currently Connections English 8th grade teacher and Creative 7th and 8th grade teacher at JLS Middle School in Palo Alto, California. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning.
I am so delighted to have you as a guest on Education Now. First of all, I consider the Palo Alto schools model schools. And by that I mean it's difficult to find schools in the public system that could equal the Palo Alto schools. And I have been trying very hard to get feedback from teachers on the Common Core and testing and all of this information from seasoned public school teachers. Now, how long have you been teaching at JLS?
At JLS, I've been teaching, oh gosh, I think it's been about 8 years. No, 9 years.
About 9 years.
So, yeah, 9 years. I've been teaching, this is my 19th year of teaching, but only 8 years or 9 years at Palo Alto.
Right. I know you're well seasoned. I know that you've been teaching longer than just at JLS, but so 9 or 10 years at JLS in Palo Alto. And just so the listeners know, Kim Losey did teach both of my granddaughters at JLS, and they both just love her. So I'm just honored to have you here.
Thank you.
I know you graduated from Hunter College in New York City after studying English with an emphasis in creative writing and music with an emphasis in singing early music. When I read your biography, I was amazed at the experience you'd had working with both underprivileged children and children with disabilities, as well as gifted children.
Yeah, I guess I got bored easily in my early career, and so I was exploring, trying to learn as much as I could about the profession.
Yes, I was also impressed by the number of colleges and universities you've worked in and with.
Yes, I guess I've made a career of this, yeah.
I note that before you finished your studies in New York, you went to 9 different colleges, including New York University, the University of Hawaii, San Francisco State, and more.
Yes. I had a little bit of a gypsy bug in me, I think. I always had very strong grade point averages, but I wanted to see what it was like to live in various cities around the world. So that's what led me to transfers all those times.
Yeah, it's just wonderful. And could you tell us about Project Pipeline?
Gosh, Project Pipeline was developed by Sacramento trying to answer the need for teacher recruitment in some of our, districts that were struggling with teacher recruitment, like East Palo Alto, Oakland, Pittsburgh, and some other places in Sacramento as well, although I know less about the Sacramento cohort because I was actually in the Alameda cohort. It was an alternative to the teacher training programs that one would enroll in at Santa Clara University or Hayward State, for instance. And the benefit of that program for me was that while the program was stretched out over 2 years, I was able to work full-time in East Palo Alto. And I had a mentor teacher who would guide me through that process. And then I would take courses on the weekends and then with summer intensives. So I had very much on-the-job training. That was beneficial for me because I had already been teaching for about 10 years when I started that program, but I was teaching in private school. So it was a great way to hit public schools, running.
Yes.
I don't know what the status of the program is right now. I think a lot of cutbacks happened with the recession, so I haven't actually been keeping up with the status of the program. I know it's still in operation. I just don't know if it's done here in the Bay Area anymore, if it's only up in Sacramento. So it's an interesting alternative to some of the traditional credentialing programs.
Right. Now, you got your MFA, your master's, from Vermont College in English at creative writing and an emphasis in poetry and French translation. Wow! Well, when did you first start teaching special education to adults?
I actually started working in Hawaii. I was living in Hawaii and going to Hawaii University, University of Hawaii, excuse me. And I needed a job, so I started working at Easter Seals. And I worked as a teacher's aide and climbed up through the ranks rather quickly and was a classroom teacher for adults ages 18 through. I think my oldest client was around 65 or so. I had been working in special education long before that. I started as a teacher's assistant in high school. I'd actually failed my Spanish class, and so they didn't want me to continue the second semester, so they put me as a teacher's aide in the special education class. And I took to it like a duck to water. I really like teaching, and I seem to be pretty good at it. And all through my years in college, I was working full-time because we didn't have a lot of money. So I always worked full-time while I was at school. And most of those jobs were teaching or teaching assistant jobs in special education facility. I worked also at a mainstreaming camp in the Catskills one summer, working with students with disabilities trying to mainstream into regular camp at a YMCA. I don't know. I've always had my sort of toe in that water, I suppose.
Yeah, well, there's no question in my mind that you're a well-seasoned teacher with a multitude of experiences, which makes it so much more important to me when we address the issue of testing, because you've been at it for long enough that your opinion should mean more to people than the opinion of Bill Gates. But so could you tell our listeners how you feel about STAR testing and about its being dropped in the state of California, per Jerry Brown?
I think it's a very, very interesting time for standardized tests. We're right on the precipice of a new way of doing things. I hope, if all the philosophy is instilled in what we're doing here, the state testing, the STAR testing as it's been, I think it's been written back quite a bit about the biases and the struggles that we all have with standardized testing and how it only assesses one aspect of a child. It doesn't look at the whole child. It looks very specifically at how a child can take a multi-choice test. And plenty of people have documented exactly why it is unfair to different groups of people. So the fact that we're trying a new version of assessing our students seems really positive to me. The Common Core standards are one thing, and the assessment is a different thing. I support both of them emphatically so far. Watching them be rolled out is going to be something to pay attention to, but the philosophy of the more authentic assessments that we'll be doing in place of the STAR testing, I think, is going to be a lot more fair to a lot of different students.
So you think that the Common Core is a positive thing?
I do. I think it's a challenge to implement. I think teachers are going to struggle. Schools are going to struggle. Funding is going to be a nightmare. But the philosophy of it, I support 100%.
Uh-huh. And you don't think that it will be detrimental at all to students with disabilities or English language learners? You think they're going to... Go ahead.
I think those folks are going to struggle no matter what sort of standardized assessments we use. I think using a state assessment is a very limited way of looking at a student's progress. However, these new assessments are going to be better than the old assessments. For me, when I get a new student in class, I will always get the state test scores, the transcripts from the last school or the last classroom, but it's the one-on-one time. It's the first 10 minutes of hello, how are you, that I really start to understand what a student is. It's watching the student over his shoulder while he's doing work. That tells me everything about where the child is and where he needs to go. The test scores are really not helpful. The only time that I find I really pay attention to them is when the student is not performing in the class, but his state test scores are through the roof. It tells me there's a whole bunch of other things going on. It doesn't help me diagnose what the problem is. It just helps to announce a problem. So substituting one state test for another is going to have the same challenges. No one test, no one assessment can fully tell me what's going on with a kiddo. So I think that the new assessment actually allows for more critical thinking. Students can express themselves in a variety of ways. Even students who are struggling with English can find ways to communicate and can access various parts of the test through multimedia. It's not just a reading and writing test or a reading and fill-in-the-bubble test the way it's been before. So there's more parts of the brain that can try and analyze the test, or the student taking the test can access material slightly better than in the previous format.
Now, this first year that they're going to be doing the Common Core, that's just a dry run or something. Is that true? It's not really going to be assessing the student. It's just going to be really assessing the test?
That's my understanding. I actually don't have a lot of detail. I think it's very tricky to roll out, and we're feeling our way as we go. My understanding is this first run is more about testing the test, getting feedback, and seeing how the test is rolled out. I don't think anybody is really going to take those scores very seriously in trying to understand a student. I'm not even entirely sure that we're going to get all of those results back. But I would be very skeptical of using those initial scores to influence anything heavily in the instruction for the student the next year. I think it really is about testing the test this year.
Right, testing the test. And is it going to be, the tests are going to be on the computer, is that correct?
That's my understanding, yes, because there's multimedia that is used as part of the assessment. Students might have, I don't know, four different sources to explore and examine before writing or analyzing. So a student might have a poem, a newspaper article, a small sort of video, maybe from the internet, and some other essay. And they're supposed to examine those different sources and then respond to a writing prompt. So This is what I'm saying is a little more access for other students, because the poem is one kind of reading and watching a video is another kind of experience. And so this is what we're asking students to do more and more in real life. There's more and more media that they're having to filter through, analyze, and utilize in their research and writing. So the fact that the students get to write in response instead of filling in bubbles also allows for a wider variety of responses, creativity, thoughts, and sort of alternative ways of demonstrating knowledge or analysis.
So when you say they get to write or they'll be writing responses, does that mean they have to be familiar with a keyboard?
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay, and then
I can tell you that my students, by the time they are leaving eighth grade, all of them are familiar with typing. They all type very well. They've had typing programs since elementary school. I don't have any students, even students in special education, who are really struggling with keyboarding. Now that might be because of Palo Alto and our access to the technology and the typing programs that we introduced early on. But I can tell you by the end of eighth grade, it really doesn't pose as a challenge. In fact, many of our special education students use computers in place of writing because the physical limitations of writing are more challenging than the actual typing.
Right. I really appreciate the computer, and I think it's really important that there be computer literacy. I am not anti-technology, and I can tell you that my granddaughters are so proficient, they teach me new things about the technology. So, you know, I'm all for that. But I will say that you are one of the first public school teachers that I've spoken to that is supportive of the Common Core. And their reasoning, or others' reasoning, is that it is going to be detrimental, in their opinion, to children with disabilities, children in low income, who come from underprivileged areas, and also it is a way of taking the authority, in their opinion, away from the teacher, who the teacher is the one you normally, or in the olden days, who assesses the student. And that assessment was made by looking at all of the child's work. And I know that there was research done by my mentor in Montessori way back in the 80s. And she, that a teacher's assessment was more accurate in terms of how a student will do in school and in life than any of the tests.
I don't think that the test is going to be replacing any of what you've just described. I think it's another version of the state testing that will allow for influences in putting together strategies for teaching. I actually find that the Common Core standards are much more relaxed in terms of how we interpret them, how we utilize them. For years, I've been teaching the same novels 5 times a day in my various periods of the class. For the last 10 years, it's the same novels that I have to crank out. There's very little flexibility. With the Common Core, there is an expectation that I will bring in multiple sources. I will be collaborating with teachers in other disciplines so that there is a more comprehensive experience for students in learning. So what's happening in social studies and in English talk to each other. And so the students are able to go deeper into subject matters. And a lot of that is based on my creativity, my ability to figure out what would be most interesting to the students, which would be more appropriate grade level. If there's students who are struggling, I can bring in alternative sources. I find it to be a lot more flexible for trying to help the students and meet their needs. I wanted to speak to one other thing. I want to be very clear, because this is something that irks me in terms of technology. While I think that there's actually going to be less of a problem, students using technology to be tested. And it's a real-world experience. A lot of times when you take, you know, DMV test or something like that, they're online these days. And in colleges, they're absolutely using more and more online assessments. So helping prepare the students for that real-world experience is important, and I don't think that low-income or disabilities are going to be that inhibiting. Students are using technology all the time. But the thing that I think is very important, very, very important to point out, is that using technology in order to give students text is somewhat problematic. Looking at brain studies, students who read online or on a Kindle can only slow down and read a text so deeply. I think there's one study that says reading an article online and reading it thoughtfully, the eye only ever looks at 26% of the text, that most of the text is unread. Now, that is very, very different when students are reading on paper, reading out of a book or a newspaper or something like that. So allowing a student to use paper to read will allow him to read the text much more deeply and be able to analyze it much more thoughtfully. So replacing all of the textbooks and everything and going online and doing Kindle technology will actually make our readers less proficient at analyzing and understanding literature. So while I do support the technology for the assessment, I don't support all technology for reading. I want to make clear.
Okay, that's very clear. And how about for creative writing? The technology, do you feel that it inhibits creative writing, writing on the computer, doing your creative writing on the computer rather than, you know, pencil and pen on paper?
I think there's so many different ways to approach that, and whether we're talking about creative nonfiction, fiction, poetry, playwriting, it's such a broad topic. I have limited access to the laptops for students, so I can't have a computer in front of every student every single period for creative writing. In that sense, I have to choose when to use the technology because I have to share with other teachers. And that's working out fine because students will draft pieces on notebooks or at home on the computer, and then when they come to class, they can type on the computer or they can type at home. So I think the initial process has been very much pen and paper, and then the final pieces that the students are polishing and submitting to be analyzed are printed from a computer.
Right.
That process goes through several drafts. Now, if I had access to computers every single day and I could provide a laptop to students every single day for creative writing class, I think the students would absolutely choose to use the computers, but I would try to limit that because I believe that there's all different ways to stretch creativity. And if they're used to working on the computer, then that's not going to teach them new tricks, so to speak.
Right, I understand what you mean.
In fact, I have the students write poems with their feet, for instance.
How wonderful. That's just wonderful. I mean, to jump back, if you don't mind, now to the Common Core, I want to talk to you some more about other reasons that other teachers are resistant and or downright, you know, really volatile and angry about the Common Core, and that is that assessment has already been being used to evaluate teachers, not students, but teachers, so that if a teacher's students don't do well or didn't do well on the STAR tests, then it was the teacher's problem. It wasn't because of the students. It wasn't the family. It wasn't if they were English language learners. It was the teacher. And so the profession of teaching has gone through a detrimental, terrible process over this STAR testing and the use of these STAR tests to evaluate teachers. Do you feel that's true?
I think it's complicated. There's a lot of things going on that you're talking about there. You're talking about just the facts about how STAR tests are being used to evaluate teachers. There's feelings going on. So I'm going to try and address it in the ways, in the different levels that you've brought up. I remember when they rolled out the California State Standards, and now we're doing Common Core. So I've watched the pendulum swing back and forth a couple times in my career. I remember working in East Palo Alto when the test scores were determining all sorts of things, and school districts were put on notice that they were going to be taken over by the state because the scores were, you know, one way or another. I remember there was even talk about incentives for teachers who got their scores up, and I remember the madness from when the STAR tests first were rolled out. Was it like 10, 12 years ago? And people were panicking. They were really worried that they were going to get fired because of the scores and these kinds of things. And I say it seems like the same panic again. The truth of it is I don't think there were so many teachers who were fired because of their students' STAR test scores. I don't know a single one, but then I haven't made a huge study of it. None of my colleagues, I understand, have even had a good talking to because they've had bad test scores. So that's the first thing. I can see why people would fear that. Change is difficult for some people. The second thing is, I know I'm very unpopular when I say this, but yeah, if a student isn't doing well, and maybe that's assessed by the STAR test scores or the Common Core or his grades or what have you, I do feel like a lot of it's the teacher's fault. And even if the student is coming from a low-income situation or he's an English language learner or he's on drugs or there's a crisis situation or any number of the very human things that people experience, it is up to the teacher to circumnavigate all of that and still provide a learning experience. That is our job. And so my job is not done until every single one of my students have learned what I have been given the task to do. And that's the curriculum. That is the skills that I'm supposed to bestow upon them. I have to work my tail off in the short time that I have those students to make sure every single one of them accomplishes it, no matter who he is. The label of special education or English language learning are just two labels of the many different challenges that students come with. I work in middle school. Those students are going through puberty. That is about the craziest thing to try and teach through I've ever come across. Those kids can be crazy just because of their hormones.
That's right.
That's not an excuse. I have to teach them anyway. So I actually am going to be very unpopular among my colleagues in saying, you know what, if your kids are not doing well on the state tests, too bad. Yeah, there should be teacher accountability. Get to work.
And what is your student-faculty ratio there? How many students do you have in your classroom normally?
Because I work in the Connections program, I have very large Connections classes. They cap them at 26 right now. I know that's very small compared to other classrooms in the States. My creative writing class is usually around 33, 35 students, which is very, very large. And then I have, by a strange scheduling glitch this year, I have one class that has 12 students in it. So I have a bunch of different experiences going on right now. I would say that typically an English class has about 25 students in it.
Yeah. And do you have an aide helping you out in the classroom?
Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. The aide is dependent on what sort of special education student needs I might have in a class. So if I have a student who needs some extra help with having things read to him or needs some behavior redirectives or something like this, I might have an aide to come and help support me in helping that student in the entire class. My aide is meant to help support the entire class, not just the one student. But I don't just have an aide in the classroom at all. It's only if I have a special education student with particular needs.
Right. And so do you feel that there will be consequences from the federal level for dropping the STAR testing?
I'm not entirely sure what all the politics are there. No Child Left Behind has been really, it's been difficult to navigate because it says one thing and does another and then says another thing and does yet another thing. And I know that I had to take all sorts of tests to prove that I was able to do what I was doing in the classroom. And it cost a lot of money to take those tests. It was, sort of went back and forth all over the place. I don't really understand what the Fed wants to do or not to. I do believe in trying to standardize education across the nation like most countries do. The fact that the states are at the head, I don't necessarily agree with. But it's a very, very large country to try and roll out standards. I am encouraged to see that so many states are volunteering to adopt the Common Core standards because I think that puts us more on the playing field of other countries. If I look at some of the Nordic countries and the amazing work that they've done in recent years, it's a national standard that they're trying to roll out and implement. I think that it would be very interesting if we started thinking more thoughtfully about having standardized national education, not just emergency, No Child Left Behind, looking at the bottom of the pile, but looking at the high end of things as well.
Race to the top is the new, since Obama, it's Race to the Top instead of No Child Left Behind. And I know that in Finland, which has the best schools in the world right now, you know, the Finns say, well, you know, we got all of our ideas from America. And, of course, that was...
They did. I went to conferences with a number of them, actually.
Right. But, of course, that was before Ronald Reagan and the 80s, when we really were. California education was free. Public university was free. Public education was second only to New York and California before Ronald Reagan. And so, you know, it was, those were golden times, and we had a student-faculty ratio that was really supportive of students and teachers, and the teaching profession was looked at as any other profession. There was a lot of respect for teachers, which I see is just disappearing in this country. We did listen to experts in child growth and development, which we are not doing right now. We are not asking experts in child growth and development how they feel about the Common Core, how they feel about STAR testing and how that affects a child. We are not doing that in this country. They do that in Finland. And in Finland, they pay their teachers. The teachers are so well paid. So there are so many ways in which we are not doing what's best for students. We are not respecting teachers. And it makes me sad. And I do wish that the rest of the country had Palo Alto-type schools. But, you know, when Prop 13 passed, Palo Alto said, no, we're keeping our property taxes going to education. Which, of course, the rest of California doesn't do. And so that's one of the reasons why I think it's such a model there in Palo Alto. They're such model schools, and I do love them. And I do appreciate your taking your time to come and talk about these issues with us. Is there anything that you would really like to leave my listeners with that you feel, how they feel that they can be supportive of students and teachers and the Common Core, if you think it's a good thing? What would you like to leave them with?
I would like to say I'm really excited about the Common Core standards because it's going to allow for a lot more creativity and different resources will allow some antiquated resources to go away and to bring in new resources. I think it's going to encourage collaboration with teachers instead of teachers teaching like little islands or teaching only within their departments. It's going to be able to provide a more comprehensive education full of critical and creative thinking for our students, and I couldn't be more excited about it. I would encourage parents and other folks to be more thoughtful about and open-minded about the changes and be really more thoughtful about how to fund some of the new resources that we need. I think that's going to be the major challenge for us.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jenna and Alina, their parents opted out of testing. So they were not tested in elementary. They were not tested at JLS. They were not tested until they got to high school, you know, because they were going to go on to university. And they did just fantastically well on the tests without all of that other stuff. So we don't agree, but I just love what you've done for my girls, and I just think that you're a fabulous teacher.
And well, thank you.
And I thank you so much for being on the show today.
Sure. Well, good luck to everyone trying to navigate these waters.
Thanks so much. Thank you so much, Kim Losey, for your time.
All right.
Bye now. Hello, Anthony Cody, and welcome back to Education Now.
Hi, Athena. Great to be with you again.
Yeah, I wanted to invite you back during this time when the Board of Education Now has asked me to do a focus on California and the Common Core. I did a show with seasoned teachers, Heather Poland and Tina Andre, both from Southern California, and quoted Amy Pearlstein, a teacher in Riverside, which is also in Southern California. And in a show, I did that in a show that I shared on Education Now on January 21st of this year. So I wanted to continue the conversation on this topic with teachers in Northern California. And you spent 24 years working in Oakland schools, 18 of them as a science teacher at a high-needs middle school, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, and you know, I know you've just come back from a big conference, and I want to hear about that as well, the Network for Public Education, as well as talking about the testing and the Common Core.
Sure.
So, let's just start with the Common Core. Can you tell the listeners how you feel about STAR testing being dropped in the state of California?
Well, dropping STAR testing is a good first start, and I'm really happy that we're not doing an utterly useless test. And I should note that I'm not in the classroom anymore, and I'm not even in Oakland anymore working. I live in Mendocino County now, and my work takes me all over the country. I do work with teachers around project-based learning, as well as a lot of political work around all these issues. So I'm not in the trenches on the front lines, as it were, implementing Common Core. So my perspective is from my own experience, and really my kind of what shaped my viewpoint towards Common Core was a feeling of intense frustration with No Child Left Behind. And that led me to kind of have a hope that before we launched into anything new, we would do a bit of reckoning on what the impact of No Child Left Behind was, and sort of what were the reasons that it had caused so much harm to schools like the one I taught at in Oakland. And I don't think we've done that yet. In fact, I think Common Core continues a lot of the patterns that were present in No Child Left Behind. Under Common Core, we're getting tests which are promised to be significantly more difficult than the tests that preceded them. Everyone says that they're going to be more rigorous, more difficult than the tests that we had before. So that means, and we're already seeing this, that more students will be labeled failures. More schools will be labeled failures. More teachers will be labeled failures. And so I can't see that this is a big improvement. And this is what we're already seeing, you know, in the state of New York. They've already had the tests that were aligned with the Common Core. Now, in California, you know, the California Teachers Association has a lot more, a fair amount of influence statewide. And we have some friends, you know, in the governor and Tom Torlakson. And so they're taking a slower approach and phasing Common Core in more slowly. And so we don't have, I guess we're going to have some trial testing of Common Core tests this spring. As you mentioned, we won't have the STAR tests. But, you know, a year from now, we will get the full-fledged Common Core tests, and they will be used for accountability purposes. And many of the districts are implementing things like evaluating teachers based on test scores. So I still am highly skeptical about whether Common Core is going to take us anywhere new or if it's going to actually make things worse.
No, do you think that, I mean, you're happy that STAR testing has been dropped, and I'm really happy that it has been as well. And but now, who's created Common Core? Is it the same? Is it Pearson who created the STAR testing? Are they create the Common Core, the test?
Well, Pearson is involved in some of the creation of. I believe they're working on the PARC test. I'm not positive. In California, we are using something called the Smarter Balanced test, which is has been developed by a consortium, and I'm not sure if Pearson was involved in that, but you know, that's the test that we're going to get in California.
And what was it? Who is the consortium again? Are they going under a moniker of some kind? Some kind of a group name?
Well, Smarter Balanced is the consortium that has come up with the test that California is getting. I believe Pearson is partnering. I'm just doing a little online research while you're talking with me.
Right.
Saying, you know, and I'm finding that they're, you know, that they will be working with Pearson to develop the tests.
Yeah, that's what I thought, Anthony.
And the tests are going to be largely computer-based, delivered online.
Right.
So that's one of the things that was, you know, that was motivating the purchase of iPads. The investment of $1 billion in iPads by the Los Angeles School District.
Right. I want to talk about that because I have really no problem with iPad. I have no problem with technology. Mm-hmm. What I have a problem with is that you're using them for tests instead of research and expanding, you know, the knowledge base. You know, you're looking at them to use them in this way, you know, is just bizarre.
Yeah.
But I have absolutely no problem with technology. I love it. But now, and I'm not surprised at all that Pearson's involved in this, of course, because that's all that money. And that's annoying to me that money isn't going more directly to the students for their learning and to the teachers so that the teachers can implement it. But now, isn't Bill Gates involved in this as well?
Yeah, well, if you go back and look at the genesis of the Common Core, the Gates Foundation funded the nonprofit organizations, the National Governors Association and the Chief Council of State School Officers were sort of the organizations that spearheaded the development of the Common Core. And basically, these organizations were relatively dormant, and they have received millions and tens of millions of dollars from the Gates Foundation to do this work under their sort of leadership. so that everybody can say that this was a state-led project.
Now, Anthony, do you know if anywhere along this assembly line of getting the Common Core together and more to the test, that anyone who has an expert in child growth and development, have they been consulted?
Not a whole lot. You know, I wrote what, back in 2009, when I first heard about the Common Core, I started tracking it. And when they announced the development process, I wrote a blog post about it called The Secret 60, Prepare to Write Standards for 50 Million. Because basically there were a couple of teams of very small teams, which were dominated by people who worked for Achieve and some of the test-making companies. There were no teachers involved, and there were no early educators involved. And the K-2 standards have been especially heavily criticized, and all the leading experts in child development have actually come out and pretty much condemned the Common Core at the K-2 level.
Right.
So that's, you know, and basically what happened was they had this drafting process, and then they had a review process. And in the review process, they allowed teachers and, you know, people from the teachers' unions to weigh in and offer feedback. And but that was after the standards were already written. So that's been part of some of the dispute has been, you know, were teachers involved? It's my contention that teachers were not involved in the original writing of the standards, and I think that's very significant, that there were, you know, a dozen test writers there and not a single teacher. But, you know, the response to that is, oh, well, teachers had input afterwards. And I just don't think that's enough. And I think, furthermore, that as long as we have this high-stakes accountability system where test scores are the be-all and end-all for our system, you know, whether we use the STAR, you know, the California content standards or the Common Core standards, we're not really going to move in the direction we need to move. We're still moving in a test-centered system.
Not a child-centered.
Correct.
Which, you know, which is, you,
right.
you, which you would think would be the focus of public education. But,
yeah
I really appreciate that feedback. But, and most of all, I'm just so annoyed that they are not consulting with persons who are experts in child growth and development. I think it's very, you know, telling in the research is that children in middle school are very much like toddlers.
Mm-hmm.
They need a lot of sleep, you know, they have a lot, mm-hmm. you know, all of these other things. None of that is being taken into consideration. It is
it's just
depressing.
Well, and if you think of the philosophy, you know, if you look at the rhetoric, look what happened in New York when they gave this test and 70% of the kids failed the test. What was the response? You know, if I gave a test and 70% of my students failed, I would really have to think twice about my teaching and, you know, and the test itself, whether it was really a good test. But the people, you know, Arnie Duncan said, well, people are upset because, he actually said, white suburban mothers are upset because their children aren't as brilliant as they thought they were. And, you know, basically and the governor of New York said, this is just fine, you know, this is giving us, they all sort of acted like this was a wake-up call, and that's sort of what the philosophy is, you know, prove that the schools are broken, and prove that the kids are not good enough, and that's the reason why we have unemployment, and we need to, you know, our response needs to be, make the kids' career and college ready. The problem is not our economy. The problem is not the fact that we're outsourcing jobs, the fact that manufacturing has all moved overseas, the fact that, you know, we're actually employing fewer and fewer people. Well, it isn't because we lack educated people. You know, the unemployment rate, our economic troubles are not because we lack educated people. There's research that shows that. So all this, you know, and actually test scores are higher than they have ever been. If you look at Department of Education statistics, graduation rates are higher than they've ever been. We're graduating more young people from college than we ever have. So, you know, at the same time, we're hearing all this rhetoric about how our schools, the education system is broken. And here we have another set of tests that's going to prove that the schools and the children are subpar and that's the problem. I think it's all a bunch of theatrics to hide the fact the underlying economic problems are really the source of our problems and not our schools. And I think it's also being used to justify the dismantling of the public education system, the defunding of public education and in its place shifting money to technology providers, to charter schools, and so on.
Right. And, you know, once again, when you bring up charter schools, I want to make sure that there's a distinction between the chain charter schools, where the head of the chain charter school makes, millions and of dollars, and it's not, they're not teacher-based, they're not led by, they weren't formed by teachers and parents. They were, they're corporate entities, privatizing, and mostly in areas where parents are not empowered. And and so once again, it's the people in poverty who are getting the shaft. Well, we're all getting the shaft, actually. I find it so disheartening that we are not. What are the unions doing? Are the unions doing anything?
Well, let me give you a little bit of encouragement because we just came back. I just came back from Austin, Texas, where there were about 400 very impassioned advocates of public education gathered from all over the country. We had teachers, we had union folks, we had parents, we had school board people, we had academics, we had a lot of bloggers there. Over, you know, probably about 100 bloggers were there, we had work and speeches from some really inspiring people. Diane Ravitch spoke, and
she's John so King. Fabulous.
Yeah, and Karen Lewis, the teachers union president from Chicago, spoke, and their speeches are up online if you want to see them. If you go to the a website called schoolhouselive.org, you can find the speeches from the conference.
Schoolhouselive.org?
Yeah, schoolhouselive.org has the keynote speeches, and
this was really about the sponsored by the Network for Public Education,
The Network for Public Education.org is that group's website, and that organization has just been in existence for a year. It was founded by Diane Ravitch and myself, and we have a board of about a dozen people that's very hardworking, and we have been endorsing candidates who are willing to stand up for public education, and we're trying to build a pushback against all the obsession with high-stakes testing and the push for privatization. We just issued a call out of that conference for congressional hearings, and I want to encourage folks to let your congressperson know that it's time to really take stock of all the damage that's being done by our obsession with tests, and we're starting to get some traction on that. We're hoping that people around the country will contact their representatives and get them looking at this, because this has gone on. You know, No Child Left Behind was really a disgrace, and by the 2008 presidential campaign, most folks don't recognize this or remember this, but when Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton were on the campaign trail, the biggest applause that they got in their speeches was when they criticized No Child Left Behind. Unfortunately, the Department of Education, President Obama's Department of Education, has basically just rebranded No Child Left Behind and
as a race, as rebranded it Race to the Top.
Race to the Top, yeah, right. And they have a whole waiver process that requires even more attention to test scores. So we really need our congresspeople to take a stand on this and really investigate it.
Yes, we do. Another way that people can make waves is to opt their children out of the tests.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, a lot of parents don't know that they have the power to do this. And
right.
They do, because these are not the state's children. But unfortunately, you know, I don't know that information will reach the people that really
it's starting to get out. I don't know if you followed what's happened in Chicago in the last week. It started with one elementary school, and it has spread. Now, I believe there are many, many schools. It started with the staff at one particular school that decided to boycott the standardized tests, and they were threatened by the district. The district said that they were going to try to fire the teachers. They were going to try to revoke their licenses. And they got support from the community, support from the students, support from the parents, and they have held strong, and now it's spreading to other schools who are boycotting this state standardized test.
Yes, I know. I have been following it, and I'm just thrilled with what's happening in Chicago. And even their union, you know, really is, they've been really... On Education Now, love the Chicago teachers' strike. They were just so proud of them.
Yeah.
The other thing, though, that I'm curious, that I wanted to share with you is that there are science and math teachers who really think Common Core is wonderful, especially in those areas. And so it's so difficult for them... You know, to just throw the baby out, you know, with the bathwater.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's a complicated issue, and that's, you know, I don't. That's why I made pains to point out that I'm not in the classroom, and I haven't been for a while. I'm trying to look down the road and see, does this system perpetuate our obsession with tests, or does it undermine it? And what I've seen, you know, what I can see looking on the bigger picture is that it's going to ultimately reinforce our reliance on standardized tests. There are some things in the Common Core in terms of science and even math that are improvements over some of the standards that they may be replacing. But if at the end of the day the scores on those tests are significantly lower, and in response our schools must then teach to the test more, and honestly, there's a lot of rhetoric about how these tests are different from tests that have ever come before, and that they're going to somehow measure critical thinking and all of that. I will believe that when I see it. I have yet to see a standardized test that truly honors the thinking of a child. You can create a question like on the GRE, if you ever took the GRE, you can create questions that are very difficult and that require a high level of thinking, of organizational thinking or logic or whatever. But that's not the same as the sort of creativity and open-ended thinking that I think we need to honor in our students. And so I'm really still a skeptic about the quality of the tests that are coming.
Yeah, I really think that it's good if a student has to write.
Sure.
And not fill in bubbles. And so, you know, those are some of the other problems that I personally have. But I'm not anti-technology. I don't think you are either.
No, I'm not. My concern with technology, like with, for example, with Los Angeles investing $1 billion of funding that was earmarked for facilities, maintenance and improvement of facility.
You know, or how about books?
Books have been thrown by the wayside pretty much.
Right, and libraries.
But you know, that $1 billion was supposed to repair schools. I mean, I'm talking about roofs, you know, roof repair to keep the roof from leaking. You know, have drinking faucets in the hallway, have bathrooms that work, you know, and, I find it kind of incredible that they would take 25-year construction bonds and spend them on iPads that are going to be obsolete in 3 years.
Right. How about spending it on making gardens and so the kids get decent food in public school? I mean, all this stuff that came out about contaminated meat, and that's what we're feeding our children in public school. I mean, our priorities are so far from the children that...
Well, and there's a sort of a dream, I think, on the part of technologists. If you look at, you know, other spheres of activity, you know, in terms of commerce and the way we sell things and the way we manufacture things, computers have truly revolutionized a lot of that and made things a lot more efficient. And that's where, you know, our productivity gains have come from in the last couple of decades. And so I think people like Bill Gates look at education, and they don't see computers as being central. They see computers as being off to the side. And really what they want to do is put that computer in the absolute center of all the instruction that's going on. I saw, I actually met Joel Klein a couple of nights ago, Monday night, in Austin at the South by Southwest. And he was launching a new tablet and curriculum package. He has this big corporation. He's gone from being the chancellor of the New York City schools, largest school district in the country, to being the CEO of Rupert Murdoch's Amplify. And
oh my word, Rupert Murdoch! Talk about an enemy of we the people.
They have a tablet. That's kind of like an iPad, except it's designed for a school, and so it's more rugged than an iPad. And then they have this whole curriculum platform that sits on it, and the idea is basically, you know, the teacher monitors the student's work by an interface that where every keystroke that the child makes is observable. And recordable is recorded and observed by the teacher, and then the teacher, they advertise three times the reading, three times the writing, three times the feedback. Supposedly, this device delivers, and it does it by making that device central to, you know, basically putting that device in between the teacher and the student.
Right.
And then, you know, everything the student does goes through that device to the teacher.
Well, of course, because I'm, you know, I'm Montessori-based myself, and then to me, the guide, you know, the guide with the students is the, you know, is presenting the Common Core, or should be. And so you are disempowering the teacher. You are doing, it's just not a good idea from my perspective. And it doesn't serve the child. It wouldn't matter, if it was Bill Gates or Rupert Murdoch. Neither of them have credentials. to talk about anything about teaching. And if we would just follow Finland's example, and you know, the Finns say, we learned it all from America, what you used to do before Ronald Reagan, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we know how to do it. And we and if we would follow, there's a good model for us. There's Finland. They pay their teachers extremely well.
Right. And what they, you know, what they see is, you know, the bottom line for a lot of these folks is efficiency. And what they want to do is they want computers to do the personal, they call it personalized learning. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what these the Rupert Murdoch talks about and Bill Gates talks about. And what they, what the idea is, we can have larger class sizes, and we somehow compensate for that by actually personalizing all this stuff through the, through these devices. And so we have fewer persons, but more personalization.
That just is really a contradiction. That is circular reasoning, and it wouldn't, that kind of reasoning would just not fly in any philosophy class that I know of. You know, that kind of logic. It's just pathetic.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I want to say, I want to say goodbye now, Anthony. I've enjoyed this so very much. And I'm so happy to hear about the conference for the Network for Public Education and that it went well and that the unions are involved in supporting Diane Ravitch and empowering parents. And I just wish Amy Goodman would have Peggy Robertson on, you know, to talk about opting out.
I wish she would too. And but Diane Ravitch was on The Ed Show yesterday, which was Wednesday,
March 5th.
She's going to be on again today in just about an hour on Thursday, March 6th.
So that's today. We're talking right now. I'm talking with Anthony at 12:59, and so p.m. right now, Pacific Standard Time. And so she's going to be on today in an hour, but this show won't be posted to Education Now's website quite that fast, I'm sorry to say. But I'm glad to hear that she's going to be on the Ed Show again. And and I will definitely put in the promotion, I will put a link to Diane Ravitch's blog, and that way people can keep tabs on what she's doing. And I'm going to, in the promotion, I will mention, I will give links for the Network for Public Education and Schoolhouse, schoolhouselive.org. I will put that in there as well, and I'm glad that we mentioned it again here. And I will also post links to shows we've done together in the past, as well as a link to your fabulous Living in Dialogue on Education Week.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Athena.
Thank you for all you do, Anthony.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by. And so, become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams. The one they picked, the one you know.